Welcome to the Drive Time Show on Toledo Sports Leader, 106.5 The Ticket.
Oh, he fumbled the ball. Now he fumbled it in the air, and it's picked up by Michigan State at the 20, the 15, the 10, and he's going to score. No time left. You've got to be kidding me. That you could not write.
This 106.5 The Ticket Sports Exclusive is driven by the low payment king, Ralph Mahalik Jr. at the Monroe Dodge Chrysler Jeep Ram Superstore.
Here we go. Snap. Spot. Kick on the way. It's no good. It's no good. It's no good. And it's over. The Lions have won it for the first time since 1991. They come to Green Bay and post an improbable victory.
Get ready. It's now drive time.
Feeds it Elliott, who shoots straight ahead and pushes it into the end zone. Ezekiel Elliott on a 9-yard touchdown run. And with just under 13 minutes to play in the fourth quarter, the lead has grown.
Here's the host of Drive Time.
Now Gretzky's got a breakaway. He's in all alone. He shoots and scores. Curry blocks the shot. Sent Gretzky in. 3-0 Los Angeles. Wayne Gretzky gets the goal.
Mike Miller is out there watching.
On its way, here's Chris DeMarco to win it. He wins it. DeMarco, 15 feet, 4 inches, center of cup, President's Cup to the United States.
All right, everybody, how are you? Another edition of Drive Time right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket, coming to you from the Monroe Dodge Chrysler Jeep Ram Superstore. Again, congratulations to the low payment king and everybody up here in this wonderful showroom and the service area as well. 50th anniversary sales event continues. Visit TheMonroeSuperstore.com. You're tuned to the home of the Tigers, the Lions, the Buckeyes, and the Wolverines. Boy, talked about a lot of different subjects here this week. We started out the week talking about the National Football League draft. Lions style, by the way, with Mike O'Hara. DetroitLions.com. Detroit News, many, many years, but covering the Lions, believe it or not, since the 1960s. Also had the voice of the Lions on, Dan Meller, on Tuesday. We got an update on the Hens Tuesday afternoon from John Wagner of the Toledo Blade. Dave Briggs joined us last night from Cleveland. He's got a hotel room over there. He's covering the Cavs on one night and the Cleveland Indians on the next night. We're going to do a little bit of the same of that tonight with David Glazier of the News Herald in Cleveland. He's been covering the Cavs for a long time. He's at Progressive Field tonight covering the Cleveland Indians and the Detroit Tigers. And also last night talked a little high school hockey. Mike Jones, Northview. Northview won two state championships in his 8-year run over there. So we kind of spread it out this week a little bit. But again, at 5:15 tonight, David Glazier, Cavaliers, talking a little bit about the Indians and the Detroit Tigers as well. Thursday night, Arca night, Don Radabaugh, the communications and media manager for Arca, will join us at about 5:40 tonight. Racing coming up throughout the rest of the month here in the area. A lot of great things happening on the local tracks as well. A lot of entries in the fan base seems to be coming out in bigger and larger numbers as well. Reed Funeral Home Detroit Tiger report. Let's talk about it just a little bit. Cleveland wins it again last night by a score of 4-0 behind the pitching of Corey Kluber, the 2014 Cy Young winner for the Cleveland Indians. Isn't it just like the Cleveland Indians? They had 8,770 some at that ballpark last night, which was the second smallest crowd in the history of the Cleveland Indians. Their Cy Young winner is pitching, shuts out the Detroit Tigers, who, by the way, have now lost 5 consecutive games to Cleveland. Detroit remains 4 games out. White Sox got beat last night by the Boston Red Sox. So the Tigers going into tonight's game with Michael Fulmer, the rookie pitcher, of course, that was demanded to be part of the trade. Dave Dombrowski sending Cespedes to the New York Mets. He said no deal about 4 or 5 times until the name Fulmer came up. He'll get a start against the Indians tonight against Trevor Bauer. But isn't it like the Cleveland Indians, you know, basically a franchise that had such a proud run in the 90s and so on and so forth, and they get a great pitching performance last night from their ace, Corey Kluber. And believe me, the Indians have some pitching, but everybody's across the street at the Q witnessing one of the great shooting performances in the history of the NBA. Only the Cleveland Indians, 8,773, I think it was last night, over at Progressive, second smallest crowd again. But LeBron and his teammates, Kevin Love and Kyrie Irving, putting on a tremendous, tremendous show for the Cavs. We'll touch on that as well. But again, you know, we've seen Toledo Walleye crowds almost that big. Again, 87-73 last night in Cleveland to watch the Tribe beat the Tigers for the fifth straight time. The Tigers again tonight. As I mentioned, Fulmer on the mound, Trevor Bauer for the Indians. The Reed Funeral Home starting lineups for tonight's game. Ian Kinsler, he'll lead off for Detroit. J.D. Martinez remains in that number two hole. He's in right. Miguel Cabrera will bat third. No surprise there, playing first base. Victor Martinez, he will DH tonight, switch hitter. Castellanos, who came into the series leading the American League in hitting, play third base. James McCann, no doubt about it, bright future in Major League Baseball. He's a keeper, tremendous arm, great presence behind the plate, handling pitch. To a slow start, though. He is batting a even 100, and a guy that's hit very, very well. Jared he'll be batting left hand. Short tonight. A great all year long. So Avilas, Mike Avilas will get the start. Andrew Romine will play center field. So some with Romine in center, Avilas at shortstop, Saltamaki. You're watching Francisco Lindor, the shortstop for the Cleveland Indians. This is a big-time up-and-coming star, and the Indians, for some reason, have had the Tigers' number this year. The Tigers just two games over 500. Again, 14-12. They are four games behind the Chicago White Sox. We will have that game over on the AM side, 1470 WTOD, with the pregame show tonight starting at 5:45. That Detroit Tiger Report and our lineup for tonight's show, as always, brought to you by Reed Funeral Home, established in the early 1900s, historic downtown Sylvania. Reed Funeral Home, part of this great community for nearly a century. Visit reedfuneralhome.com. Family owned and operated, serving Sylvania, Toledo, and southern Michigan again since the turn of the century. David Glazier is right around the corner. We're going to talk Indians and we're going to talk red hot Cavs after this. This is Drive Time, driven by the low payment king, Ralph Mahalik.
On ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Here's your host of Drive Time, Mike Miller.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the Monroe Dodge Chrysler Jeep Ram Superstore. The 50th anniversary sales event continues. You're tuned to ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Glad to have you on board, everybody. By the way, today is Thursday, May the 5th, and this is show number 1,132 for Drive Time. And we have ran a total of 355 different guests through this show. And one of our A-listers joins us now from the Press Box Progressive Field in Cleveland, where I guess they're going to have a little bit of a bigger crowd tonight. David Glazier joins us, made his way across the street from the queue over to Progressive. Haven't heard your voice in a while, David. How are you?
Good. Really good. It's been a busy couple of weeks with the Cavs and the Indians, but it's the best kind of busy.
No doubt about it. We had Dave Briggs last night from the Toledo Blade. So if you see a guy walking around that press box about 6 foot seven or 6 foot eight, Dave, he's been on the same type of schedule. And I said to him, covering two sports and four teams and you haven't had to change hotel rooms, that's not a bad thing either. Hey, before we talk about the red hot Cavs, just a quick note. And I mentioned, you know, the Cleveland Indians, they have their Cy Young winner, of course, Corey Kluber last night, you know, spinning a five-hit shutout, a tremendous pitcher, did a great job against the Tigers last night, who threatened a couple of times, but couldn't get a lot going, and lo and behold, 87-76 at Progressive, and as we talked, everybody at the queue last night, everybody downtown to watch that tremendous shooting performance by the Cleveland Cavaliers. We'll touch on that in just a moment, but it's kind of like the Indians, they get things going in the right direction. They've won five straight against the Tigers, and everybody's next door.
Well, I mean, look, it's hardly a secret. If you live around here, that Indians' attendance has nosedived in recent years. I mean, I kiddingly say, half-kiddingly, that the last 6-7 years, they appear to have misplaced about two-thirds of their fans, at least the ones who come to ball games. Now, I think there's a lot of reasons for that, some of them having nothing to do with baseball, a lot to do with economics, a lot to do with the price of coming to a baseball game, even though the Indians have gone out of their way inside the ballpark to make some concession items reasonably affordable. You know, the price of tickets, the price of parking is sky high around here. I mean, you're a dad with a wife and a couple kids, and you want to come to a ball game, and, you know, you get inside the stadium and pick up your tickets, and you're out $200. It's just, economically, it's tough. But I think attendance will improve as the season goes on. The Indians have an interesting team. And,
I agree with you.
I don't think so. I mean, I still think Kansas City is heads and shoulders above everybody else, and notwithstanding the fact that they're 5-0 against the Tigers this year over the long haul, I think I still like the Tigers better than the Indians.
Again, David Glazer joins us from Cleveland. That was an observation, by the way, David, not a criticism about the crowd last night. I think a lot of teams in a similar situation might have been battling that as well. And I agree with you. Watching the game last night and, you know, getting a little carpal tunnel on my remote going back and forth between National Hockey League playoffs and the Tigers and the Cavs and everybody else. Again, that was an observation, not a criticism. We saw this coming. Everybody knew what the attendance figure was going to be in Cleveland last night. But I got to tell you, when Francona fills out his lineup card every night, and you can fire Francisco Lindor in there batting third and short, and Kipnis batting in that number two hole playing second base, and Brantley, I think, eventually will get going, and Santana, who's been up and down and all over that lineup, he'll be batting sixth tonight. And the pitching Cleveland has, and the closers, I got to tell you, they're an interesting team. You're right. They're probably not in the same class as some of the teams in the Central. I think the White Sox are going to cool off a little bit as well, too. But they're an interesting bunch, this Cleveland team. They're fun to watch. And I think Lindor is just a – you saw him. You talked about him when he was playing in the low minors, what you saw then and what you're seeing now.
Well, I think he's just – I think dynamics, the first word that comes to mind when you watch him play. He's an outstanding defensive shortstop. He hits the heck out of the ball, slammed a three-run home run the other night off Justin Verlander that was a no-doubter. Verlander left a fastball in the right in the wrong place. Right place for Francisco, wrong place for him. And he boomed it out of here to right field. So, clearly he's the new face of the Indians. You know what, beyond that, and I know this doesn't matter in terms of wins and losses, but he's just a great young man. Very, very interesting, smart guy who I think is on his way to being the new face of this franchise. Maybe the most popular player since Omar Vizquel.
You know what, when you say face of the franchise and a good young guy, that means a lot to me because, listen, the guys we read about most of the time are the 2 or 3% that don't do things right. And listen, I've been around the game and a lot of games for a long, long time, and so have you, and a lot of good people in this game that don't get their due for being good guys because you're reading about the bad guys half the time, and the percentage is very, very low. Speaking of good, by the way, getting off my soapbox here a little bit, boy, 25 three-pointers last night from the Cavs and the Atlanta Hawks. I mean, there's no solving this mystery. This thing is going to be over, and I think over in a hurry. And I think a lot of people, of course, feel that way. Sold out Quicken Loans Arena. Just an absolute manhandling last night in a shooting display, a record-setting shooting display. They looked unstoppable. They looked unbeatable. Get them to the finals because if they're playing like this, what a matchup we might have against, a Golden State or a San Antonio. I got to tell you, it was basically unbelievable to watch a shooting display like that. Half the shots didn't even, more than half, never hit any rim, hit nothing but net.
Well, they've been, look, the Cavs have been a really good three-point shooting team all year. They've been a really good three-point shooting team for 2 years since they got Kevin Love and J.R. Smith Remember, well, I mean, obviously they signed Kevin Love before the 14-15 season, and then they traded for Iman Shumpert and J.R. Smith in December of 2014 when they were kind of remaking their team on the fly. And, you know, I mean, J.R. Smith is, as far as three-point shooters go, when he's right, he's maybe the most dynamic shooter in the game, and certainly when he gets hot, he's the hottest, streakiest three-point shooter in the game. So, I mean, he was on fire last night. Everybody was. Even LeBron, who's came in shooting, I think, 26.1% from three-point range in the playoffs, made 4 of 5. So, you know, they just couldn't miss. It bothered me a little bit after the game to hear that some of the Hawks players, I believe I was told it was Al Horford, was complaining about the Cavs shooting threes at the end of the game. You know, he felt like that was piling on. Well, you know what? Quite frankly, you know, grow a set. I mean, you're down 74-38 at halftime. You're down as much as 41 points in the second half. And this is what outrages you? That the Cavs, who were within sight of not just the playoff record for made three-pointers, the all-time record for made three-pointers, that they go for it. That Mo Williams and Dante Jones take three-pointers in garbage time, and that bothers them? You know, maybe this is going to be a sweep. I thought it might be 5 or 6 games, but it could be that the Cavs truly are inside their head. They've won 9 games in a row against this team. Swept them out of the playoffs last year, beat them 3-0 in the regular season this year, and now 2-0 in the playoffs. I mean, if what outrages you when you're getting beat by 40 is a team chasing the other team chasing a record, you know, then, you know, I don't think your head's in the right place. And I also think
I don't either, Dave. You're exactly right.
Team, you know, I think while Atlanta's a good team, maybe even a really good team, the Cavs are just far better.
Again, talking to David Glazier from the press box at Progressive Field in Cleveland. We'll have that game, by the way, on the AM side tonight at 5:45. WTOD 1470. Pregame at 5:45. First pitch at 6:10 tonight. Boy, you mentioned that 74-38 lead at halftime. Atlanta gets out to a 7-2 lead. Then Cleveland goes on a run 72-31. And the place was just absolutely electric. Tell me a little bit about, you know, we touched on the three-point shooting. If you're Atlanta, besides the complaining about, you know, quote-unquote, running things up towards the end of the game against substitute players trying to come out there and you know, bang away a little bit, what do you do from the Atlanta Hawks side of things? I mean, they came out right off the bat, Jeff Teague glaring at the Cavs bench early in this series, game one, saying not this year. I mean, what does Atlanta do? How do you regroup? What's going on in their room? Hopefully, guys besides Horford complaining. Listen, it's 2-0. It's the NBA. I don't think there's anybody around that doesn't think Cleveland's going to win. But professionals got to be planning something, some type of strategy, some type of turnaround. I mean, look at the Pistons. For crying out loud, the Pistons might be the toughest competition that this Cleveland team sees. Probably Miami might be a little bit more, but at least I give the Pistons credit for hanging around and hustling under Stan Van Gundy and at least playing some defense and, you know, not mouthing things to the other bench. There was a little bit of that going on, but from the Atlanta Hawks, put your coaching and GM's hat on here. They're huddling today to get something going in the right direction. What are they saying?
Well, I mean, Kent Bazemore, after the game, one of their really good players, said, now it's do or die. He's right. I mean, they lose game 3 at home Friday night. They're cooked. I mean, you know, there's, I mean, they, I hadn't heard about the thing with Teague. You know, sometimes if you run your mouth and you can back it up, then it's not a bad thing. But when you run your mouth and you're down 36 points at half, you know, that's just air moving around the room that means nothing. I mean, Teague and Kyle Korver are being erased by the Cavs defense. For all the talk about how they're shooting the three and how the ball's moving and how LeBron is playing so well, I mean, in the first game, Korver and Teague, who were averaging nearly 28 points in the playoffs coming in, were held to 10 or 8. I mean, I forget what it was. Korver, 0. I mean, you know, this is what the Cavs do. For all the talk about what a great shooter, streaky shooter J.R. Smith is, he's one of the best on-ball defenders in the league. And by that I mean, when you watch NBA guys play, I've always marveled at it. They're playing at full speed. They're going full speed up and down the court. And you got a guy inches away from the man he's guarding, trying to prevent him from going left, right, or where he wants to go. It's physically an impressive thing to watch. And Smith is one of the best on-ball defenders in the league. And he is completely erasing Jeff Teague in this series. Or if he's on Korver, he's erasing Korver. I mean, you know, the Cavs are more than just three stars and three-pointers. I mean, they have a nice team. They've built a nice team. They have much better depth this year than last. I mean, last year when they went to their bench, they were getting Mike Miller, who's about 5 years past being a viable contributor. They were getting Sean Marion, a great guy who, you know, just really couldn't even get the ball up to the rim last year. Now they're coming off the bench with Channing Frye, who they obtained in a late-season trade, who's a really good three-point shooter and a plus interior defender. They're coming off with Richard Jefferson. Jefferson made, I think, three threes last night and really knows how to play. They're coming off the bench with Matthew Dellavedova. There isn't a backup point guard in the league that I would take over Matthew Dellavedova. Not one. They have a nice team. They're legitimately 8 and 9 deep, and they can match you hard for 48 minutes. That doesn't mean there's not going to be a setback in the playoffs. There will be. It could be game 3 in Atlanta. It could be in the next series, whether it's against Miami or Toronto. Last year, during their playoff run, they got down 2-1 to Chicago, playing in Chicago in game 4. They could have gone down 3-1, except LeBron James makes an unbelievable shot from the corner to win the game, and from there it's a sweep. The Cavs are a really good team, and I, you know, you asked me what I would do if I was Mike Budenholzer. I tell my guys, shut your mouth, play ball.
Absolutely, well said. By the way, Raptors Heat, that game 2 is tonight in Toronto. Game 2 again in Toronto tonight. Game 3 of that series will be on Saturday night. That series moves back to Miami. Other NBA in the West semifinals. Friday night, Golden State will be taking on Portland, and the Spurs and the Thunder, they go back at it again tomorrow night. That series is tied one game each. David Glazer joins us here on Drive Time, home of the Ohio State Buckeyes. Yes, the Michigan Wolverines, the Tigers, and the Lions. David's coming to us from the press box, Progressive Field in Cleveland, with the Tigers and the Cleveland Indians get together tonight. Hey, before I let you go and let you get to work, again, thanks for taking the time. You know, it's been a busy, busy day, even for an old KG veteran like yourself. We appreciate it.
You
and I both were rooting for a guy, Johnny Manziel, and boy, I got to tell you, I expected maybe a couple of bumps in the road, but not a implosion.
Well, when your mugshot is the biggest trending photo on the web, that's never a good thing. You know, I mean, I think it's a shame. I mean, he made his own bed, now he has to lay in it. But, yeah, I mean, 2 years ago I had high hopes. And, you know, he has to pick up the pieces of his life, not just his professional football life, but his personal life. So, I mean, I think it's good karma to wish people the best when they're having problems and not to wish ill upon them, so I won't do that. But, you know, I think the next year in this young man's life is critical. He either makes some hard decisions about what really matters in life, or he continues down the path he's on, and I don't think it will end well if that's the choice he makes.
David, I'm with you. I think the older you get, and listen, you know, folks that love the social media and the sensationalism, and I think at times do root to see train wrecks. I'm not trying to be the best guy in the world here, but I'm in your corner. I don't care who it is. I'm with the karma thing, too. Hopefully he straightens this thing out as well. Hey, we'll be reading tomorrow. Thanks a lot, Dave, for coming on. Great hearing your voice somewhere down the road. We will touch base again, maybe in a matchup, again, as you said, either against the Raptors or the Heat. get to work. Thanks for coming on, Dave.
My pleasure, Michael.
David Glazer, News Herald, in the press box, Progressive Field in Cleveland, where the Tigers and the Cleveland Indians go at it tonight. Hey, hats off. I was reading a couple stories speaking of the Browns. I just think for the first time, I mean, it's going to be a little bit painful, but the deals they made at the NFL draft, and I know we kind of keyed in on the Lions this week here with Mike O'Hare and the voice of the Lions, Dan Meller, talking about the Lions draft. I was reading a couple stories today in the Cleveland papers. Hats off to them. I mean, it's going to take a while until they see the fruits of their labor this year, but it seemed like they had a little bit of a game plan and a clue this year. Again, somewhere down the road we'll find out how this all works out. But I thought Mike O'Hara, who has covered probably more National Football League drafts than anybody, your good teams build with depth. Your good teams find players in the fourth and fifth round that eventually can help you. And that's the way the Cleveland Indians, the only way the Browns are going to get out of this morass and this this deluge that they're in over there. You know, I was at a Browns game a couple of years ago. It's a shame because what a great fan base. They're loyal. They've been through a lot with the Ravens thing and, you know, Art Modell, which is a whole other subject. And I got to tell you, if you really, you know, read up on this thing and look at the T's and the dotted I's, I blame the city fathers in Cleveland as much as I do Art Modell. You had a city council there, the business leaders in Cleveland, that absolutely would not budge on anything when it came to making a deal. When you make a deal, there's a little give and take on both sides, and Modell could be demanding, no doubt about it, but got absolutely no cooperation. Art Modell did a lot for Cleveland. He was vilified for the rest of his life, believe me. But if you read the nuts and bolts in this a little bit, and I read an old article in the Wall Street Journal about it, didn't get a lot of help from the city fathers. How about Toledo city fathers and the help and the county folks and the great leadership under Joe Napoli about getting cooperation from a city, you know, to build a small little empire here? Art Modell would have liked a little bit of that in Cleveland, and maybe that wouldn't have turned out the way it was. All right, everybody, this is Drive Time. My name is Mike Miller. This is ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Coming up, a little auto racing talk as well. Don Radabaugh, ARCA, Media and Communications Manager, will join us. Special thanks to the William Swade Insurance Agency, my friend Blue, TAS Electronics, BCSN, Fred Ott Inc., Reed Funeral Home, and our good friends at ARCA. This is Drive Time coming to you tonight from the Monroe Dodge Chrysler Jeep Ram Superstore.
It's Drive Time on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Here's the host of Drive Time, Mike Miller.
All right, everybody, a little Ray Davies and Dave Davies for you there, the Kinks. Glad to have you on board, everybody. Drive Time is driven by the Low Payment King, Ralph Mahalik. This is ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. The show also driven by my good friend Blue, the William Swade Insurance Agency. Two locations to serve you, Toledo, Perrysburg. Great service, great folks, home, renters, auto, life, retirement, business, motorcycle, and a boat insurance. Just one more note here, by the way. The lovely Mrs. Meller, by the way, my wife, had her transmission basically, well, disintegrate, I guess is the best word I could use for this. But she was smart enough, and I was smart enough, that we had it serviced about, a year and a half ago. And, you know, if it's covered by warranty and you and prove that you have serviced that transmission, you know what, it's covered by warranty. So, again, just a heads up to everybody, because I got a little wind today what the cost was going to be in that transmission if it wasn't covered. It was about $6,000. So if you're driving around tonight, you get a service alert. Of course, if you got a Jeep, bring it up here to the Monroe Dodge Chrysler Jeep Ram Superstore. But listen, relieved, covered by warranty, new transmission in, and off we drove because you got it serviced. That's good advice for everybody. We talked a little Cavaliers, of course, with Dave Glazer, News Herald out of Cleveland. He's in the press box tonight. Progressive Field, where the Tigers take on the Cleveland Indians tonight. So we talked some baseball. We talked some Cavaliers. We're going to talk a little motorsports now with my good friend Don Radabaugh. He is the Communications and Media Manager for ARCA. Hello, Don. How are you?
Hey, Mike. How are you? I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Good. No, always great to hear your voice, and I'm always amazed every time I see you MC that event out at the Hollywood Casino with your kickoff get-together for the media. Always well-spoken, a true professional, Mr. Radabaugh. Hey, first things first, and I don't want to start talking about your competition. I don't even know if you can call it competition. But when I walked in here at the Monroe Dodge Chrysler Jeep Ram Superstore, who, by the way, is a big sponsor now with the great speedways around here, Flat Rock and Toledo Speedway and ARCA, the Low Payment King, and Ron got together. I'm sure you were involved with that as well. So it's great being a partner with you guys this season with the Superstore. But when I walked in here on Monday and talked to Jeremy and a lot of the race fans, my good friend Brad Hansen here, one of the great sales associates, talking a little bit about Talladega, don't waste a lot of time on it, but 35 of the 40 cars had damage. Damage estimated, Don Radabaugh, at $10 million. For a novice like myself, just educate me a little bit. What's going on here with the restrictor plates and so on and so forth? And if you got any thoughts off the top of your head, tell me about it.
Well, I don't think there's anything new going on. Multi-car pileups are product of super speedway racing at both Talladega and Daytona. Sometimes they lean on the lesser side. Sometimes they lean on the greater side, and there were just more of them this time around. Despite the multi-car wrecks, racing at Talladega was incredible across the board. You take those wrecks away, the two, three, and four wide continual lead pack, and not only the Cup and Xfinity Series races, but the ARCA race there, the General Tire 200, was fascinating. We only had three cautions for 19 laps, actually. I think at the end it's a product of super speedway racing. Some events are going to come out with more multi-car wrecks than others. But honestly, I think there's something people will sit down in front of the television and watch.
No question about that. Hey, you mentioned Talladega, and you mentioned the General Tire 200. The rookie Gus Dean wins that, a second consecutive first-time winner. And, you know, I got a little message from you today before we went on the air here tonight to kind of, you know, set up this show a little bit and talk about some of the current thing. And you've been around a long time. And, again, I'm patronizing you here a little bit. I don't mean to, but you said it's the best race you've seen in your 20 years there, Talladega, in the ARCA division.
Yeah, I haven't missed an ARCA race since Daytona 1997. I think I'm somewhere around 411 in a row or something. I've seen everyone at Daytona for 20 years. I've seen everyone up close and personal at Talladega. Between the 40 races I've seen, ARCA races between the two, this race at Talladega was the very best super speedway ARCA race I've ever witnessed. We had a 25-car lead pack that never broke apart, that went two, three, and four wide the whole way through with very few cautions. We did have those small multi-car pileups there at the end, but I had not seen anything like it. And keep in mind, Mike, we've got some pretty stout veterans in our lineups, but often we've got brand-new drivers who have never seen super speedways outside of a test. And we had some very inexperienced rookies in the field and on up to the most experienced veterans and everywhere in between, but yet we went two, three, four wide the whole way through. It was a fascinating race. I had never seen a better super speedway ARCA race in my career. It was fascinating.
You know what, Don, looking at the schedule coming up too, of course, Talladega to Toledo, a short track, the half mile, over to New Jersey to a road course, of course, then over to Pocono with the Triangle. And some dirt tracks coming up as well. And tell me about that a little bit. I guess a word you used and when we were chatting, diversity in the type of races these drivers, as you mentioned, a lot of them, guys that are just cutting their teeth, they're going to see a lot of different surfaces.
Yeah, that's really the trademark, the signature of the ARCA Racing Series presented by Menards, the tour's diversity. And it's not anything new. This tour was born on dirt tracks back in 1953, but like many of the more major league stock car series, they got away from the dirt over the years. We never did. We've been there ever since. We're very proud of our dirt track programs, the Mile Fairgrounds Dirts in Illinois, Springfield, and DeKoin. But yeah, we're coming from a 2.66-mile super speedway in Talladega to the Menards 200 ARCA race at Toledo on a half-mile bowling before we switch it up just in time to head to New Jersey to run on a 11-turn, 2.25-mile road course, just in time to go to a 2.5-mile high-speed super speedway in Pocono, MIS thereafter. But there isn't another mix of motorsports quite like there is here. What we require from these drivers to perform on the little dinky paved tracks, the big mile dirts, the giant super speedways, the Chicagolands, the Poconos, the Daytonas, the Michigans, the Kansas speedways, and of course the dirt tracks too. That you get a little something, a little bit of everything here actually. And I just think it's a really, really interesting tour. And it's, you know, it lives here in Toledo and we're proud of it and we think that's cool. The Menards 200 is going to be a fascinating race. We've got all these new composite bodies that are really connecting well with the race fans. And we're just off to a really good start this year. The racing has been phenomenal.
You know what? I'm going to see you out there in the 22nd. I was at the Menards 200 last year. Had a great time. Ran into you briefly. I know you were busy, but it's the 75th running Menards 200 at the Toledo Speedway coming up. That is in May the 22nd, everybody. Hey, how about this? Racing to this Saturday night, not far from the Monroe Dodge Chrysler Jeep Ram Superstore here. Late models, the street stocks, the figure eights up at Flat Rock. Tell me a little bit about that. Then on the 15th, the Marco's Pizza Sunday afternoon special, late model Sportsman Silver Cup 50-plus DTS, the Modifieds. A lot of great stuff going on, including Saturday at Flat Rock. And again, one more time, everybody, May 22nd, the 75th running of the Menards 200 at Toledo Speedway.
Yeah, we're looking forward to it, Mike. Flat Rock Speedway, you know, that's been around as long as the ARCA National Tour has. That goes back to 1953 as well. And, yes, it will be the season opener this Saturday night at Flat Rock. We've got the super late models, which are so cool on that little quarter-mile bull ring. So much fun to watch. The street stocks and the crazy, crazy ARCA-sanctioned figure eight division. And then we got that special Sunday afternoon show coming at Toledo Speedway. That's May 15th, Marco's Pizza Sunday afternoon special with the late model Sportsman Silver Cup 50 plus the DTS modified class. That's a really cool class. They bring a lot of cars, and it's something to see. And, of course, they'll put those crazy figure eights down on that tiny little quarter mile, too. So excited about the events coming at Flat Rock and Toledo, and especially for that Menards 200 on May 22nd.
Again, talking to Don Radabaugh, ARCA, and guy has been around racing for a long time. I don't know if he saw those races back in 1953, but he's got a pretty impressive run going, by the way. This is Drive Time. My name is Mike Miller. Hey, good news, too. John West Townley, first entry ever into the Menards 200, two-time Daytona winner and NASCAR truck winner as well at Daytona. So big names already in the field.
Yeah, the field's going to be stacked. It's going to be an amazing field. We've got testers coming tomorrow. Cunningham Motorsports is coming tomorrow with the point leader, Chase Briscoe. This kid's a sprint car driver who's never really raced on pavement, yet he somehow leads our points. He's testing tomorrow. He'll test alongside Myatt Snyder, the son of Marty Snyder, a name you'll recognize from the NBC broadcast for the NASCAR Sprint Cup Series. He's a longtime broadcaster there. His son's going to take a run, make his debut in the Menards 200 at Toledo, and he'll be testing there tomorrow.
Don, good stuff. Great hearing your voice. Always a pleasure talking to you. I'll see you out there on the 22nd, by the way. I promise I won't bother you. Every time I walk by you, you got something going on, and you guys do a great job out there. It's organized. It's a great show. See you then, and thanks for coming on tonight.
You bet, but I'm going to bother you, so plan on it. We'll see you.
Hey,
we'll see you at Toledo Speedway, Mike. Thanks for having me.
I'll be there.
Me.
Thanks, Don. Good talking to you. That's Don Radabaugh, ARCA. My name's Mike Miller. This is Drive Time. Back to close it out after this timeout. The show driven by the low-payment king, Ralph Mahalik.